Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long running things behind the scenes. We'll have Steve Geller join us at 5:45 for our Bet 365 triple option feature. Want to tell everybody at 6:20, we will be joined here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Myself along with Charlie and Steve by Drew Brees. Drew Brees will stop by and give us his thoughts on the Derek Carr situation, Tyler Shuck, what he went through as a rookie, and also want to ask him about Alvin Kamara because he's going to be such a big part of this offense for 2025. Before we get into anything else, a couple breaking things late. Want to wish a young lady that had her birthday today, Di Newman, and so Mama Di, we wish you a happy birthday today.
Woo-hoo.
Hope everything is going well for you and a big part of things here at WWL Radio, so happy birthday, Di. Charlie, this broke just a few minutes ago, but Jason Tatum, it was reported by Sham Shamani that from ESPN that it is indeed a right Achilles tendon tear. And so for Jason Tatum, man, the way the season ended last night, and you and I were talking about this off the air. Immediately when he grabbed for that back of the leg, I told you, I've talked to guys who have had those Achilles tears, and I will use this term, it's like a Venetian blind of years ago. Kind of, it rolls up the back of your leg when it tears, and it is, they tell me, a really strange feeling when it occurs. You saw him immediately grab for it. So Jason Tatum and the Celtics, they were in trouble before. Now down 3-1 to the Knicks. And, man, was Madison Square Garden rocking or what last night with the Knicks? But you hate to see a guy go down to an injury like that, no matter who you pull for, because they really work and train so hard to keep their bodies in top shape. And to be honest, Charlie, it was a non-contact injury.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was brutal, Mike. As soon as he went down, he was, like, writhing on the ground in pain. He was grabbing at his ankle. It was just hard to watch. And it's so unfortunate because it was such a great game between New York and Boston, where it was, like, the battle between Brunson and Tatum that we were all looking forward to, where Brunson puts up 39 points, 12 assists. Tatum has an incredible performance for basically the first time in the series, where he puts up 42 points in the game. And then just at the very end of the fourth quarter, on kind of an errant pass, and he's diving for it. All of a sudden, he goes down, and he's grabbing at his ankle. You instantly fear the worst in those types of scenarios because it was non-contact, and you know it was proven today that he underwent surgery to repair a torn right Achilles tendon in his ankle. So he's out for not just the rest of the postseason, but in all likelihood, most of, if not maybe all of next year as well, Mike.
Charlie, in talking, I just text an orthopedic surgeon. He said most likely he would be gone for the majority, and as you put it, the majority, if not all, of the 2025-2026 season for the Celtics, depending on his recovery. Some guys come back from it a little bit quicker than others, but most likely he will miss, if not 85% to 90% of the season. Could he come back for postseason? Quite possibly that could be the case. So Jason Tatum down, and man, the Celtics are really fighting an uphill battle now.
Well,
with a top, tough Knicks team. And, man, what a great coaching job Tom Thibodeau has done with the Knicks. And, you know, we saw it before when he was coaching with the Bulls. He's got a certain style, and you might not like it if you're a player, because he's on your butt all the time.
Right.
You know, nothing is good enough for Coach Thibodeau. But look where he has taken this Knicks basketball team.
It's incredible, isn't it, Mike? Like, we've talked with, you know, Nick Friedell about this before, and Nick covered the Bulls.
Thibodeau
was in Chicago for a while, so he's very familiar with Tibbs. But what the Knicks are doing with effectively like a six, maybe you can stretch the rubber band a little bit to like a seven-man rotation where you have the starting five of Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Karl-Anthony Towns, Jalen Brunson, and Josh Hart. But then, like, their bench is basically just Mitchell Robinson, who's a Chalmette native, by the way, and maybe McBride, the guard that plays a decent bit of minutes for him. The way that he is getting the most out of this tiny rotation in the Eastern Conference playoffs is just incredible. And he's playing his guys, and they're getting them there. Because now, if you're looking at the series, it's kind of cooked for Boston. Not just are you down 3-1, but now you're gone with your superstar player that's going to be an All-NBA player this year. He's out. So if you're the Knicks, you're up 3-1. You should be able to close out Boston at this point. And Mike, in the Eastern Conference Finals, based off of what's happening on the opposite side of the bracket with Cleveland and Indiana, we could see a nice throwback series, couldn't we? With New York and Indiana and the ECF.
Charlie, I'm old enough. I saw it.
It's before my time, but I know.
It was a little bit before your
right,
time.
Right,
yeah,
but I've heard stories.
Yeah, man, it was. You talk about some battles on the court. Man, the old Pacers and Knicks series, that was tough. And I was telling you back, you know, as a kid for me, to watch the Knicks win it in 70 and 73. And, you know, it was different back then because of the fact, and New York still is the hub of the sports media center. They can talk about L.A. I mean, they got a lot of things to do in L.A. You know, a lot of people don't care about sports. But in New York, it's a different situation.
Right.
And, man, back then, the Knicks and the Jets and the Mets. Now, a lot of people love the Giants, but their heydays were into the 50s, early 60s, and then Parcells and LT and Phil Simms and that group got them back together in the 80s. But that was some lean moments with the Giants in the 60s and into the 70s. But, man, did they love the Knicks. Red Holzman was the coach, and, you know, they had Willis Reed and Walt Frazier and Bill Bradley and Dave DeBuscher. And then a couple years later, they go out and they trade with the then Washington Bullets for Earl the Pearl Monroe. And they won another, you know, title in the NBA with that group. But, man, Madison Square Garden was the place to be. When the Knicks were playing at home, it was something special to watch as a kid on television. Also, in breaking news, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred has announced that Pete Rose, along with Shoeless Joe Jackson and others, are now eligible for the Major League Hall of Fame. Their names have been removed from the league's permanently ineligible list, ruling the status no longer applies upon their death. I just wish they would have done this where Pete was still alive. You know, because to do this post, I mean, I get it. I think they're trying to make up for it. But, Charlie, I don't like the look of this because, in essence, we saw the era of steroids, which the owners and the commissioner knew what was happening, but they refused to ban it. Okay? They turned and looked away and let it occur without putting in really strict rules on steroids. They banning those guys from entering the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, but then they open it up to people who have passed away. And it might be a nice gesture. I just wish they'd have done it that Pete Rose could have at least seen that because he deserves to be in Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so does Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. And you know, we'll see if they ever actually get in. But, I mean, this is a step. It's going to be a posthumous thing for both, obviously, Shoeless Joe, who's been passed away for a while now.
Oh, a long time.
And then Pete, who passed away a few years ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's they'll announce it sooner rather than later, if I had to guess.
Yeah, and so, but they are up for eligibility. Let's see if they get voted in, as you pointed out, Bonds and Clemens and that group. And again, they knew it was happening. They just didn't want to put any laws to stop it at that point in time because they were making ching ching. The cash register was ringing for Major League Baseball. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870, talking basketball, NBA Pelicans with David Grubb right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, hosts of the Post Up Podcast and also editor-in-chief of The Bird Writes, David Grubb. Dave, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Always glad to be on with you guys.
David, I think you've heard it like me. Man, the fix was on last night. Nobody can win a lottery with 1.8%. My thing is, and I don't buy tickets much for a Powerball or lottery, but if I had a 1.8% chance to win every time I went, I might buy a few more. I mean, you don't even have that when you go buy a Powerball and a lottery ticket. But for Dallas, you know, they lost the trade. But, boy, did they win the consolation prize now. And with their efforts now, they're going to be able to get Cooper Flagg.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge moment for the Dallas Mavericks. They've only picked – this is only their second number one pick in the history of their franchise. And the last one worked out pretty well for them, too, in Mark Aguirre back in 1980. And I'm sure you remember Mark Aguirre very well. So it worked out for the Mavericks. I'm not really one for conspiracy theories. I think sometimes the draft just works this way. I get why people do, because there are such, you know, dramatic changes in certain years. But, you know, folks in New Orleans got to remember, too, the Pelicans have benefited twice from jumping up in the lottery to get the number one pick in years that they weren't expected to do so. And if the NBA was looking to reward New Orleans for certain things, it hasn't really worked out. And the number one pick guarantees you nothing. How many number one picks have actually won with that franchise? So, you know, if the NBA were really doing this to make sure number one picks won things, you'd see a lot more number one picks winning championships with the team that drafted them.
David, one of the guys, it got brought up yesterday. We had Mark King on, who's one of the chief scouts for the NBA, and also Tavon Sadler, who's the head basketball coach at Nicholls State, but he was also heavily involved with Maryland, about Derek Queen. Now, he's a big man, but both of them brought up that he would be a nice fit. I don't know if he could get to seven. He might. But your thoughts on picking another big man for this team with that seventh overall pick, and in particular, Queen from Maryland?
I like Derek Queen. The guys that he's been compared to range from like DeMarcus Cousins, who certainly Pelicans fans are familiar with, and the versatility that he brings. I think the question for Queen is his rebounding. He did not rebound at an elite level at college, and I'm always one who you look at rebounding, it tends to be, for big men, it's the one skill that always translates. If you can rebound at the collegiate level, you can rebound at the NBA level, and you'd like to see that be a little higher. But if the offensive potential is there, and I think that you need someone to pair with Yves Misi, who is far more limited offensively around the basket, at that seventh pick, he's an option. I don't know if he's the best option for the Pelicans, but he's absolutely one of the three or four players if the Pelicans stay at seven. And I'm not 100% sure they will, but I think if they stay at seven, he's one of the three or four players you absolutely have to consider.
Well, that was my question actually for you, David, because as soon as the Pelicans dropped three spots from four to seven and got the second worst possible pick, and really, in all honesty, it was like a 2% chance to fall to eight. So it was the worst realistic possible pick that they could have ended up with at seven. I mean, do they keep this pick? I know it's a month and a half out from the actual draft, and we got time to discuss this for, you know, once again, the next month or so. But do you think that the Pelicans will use the seventh overall pick in the draft, or will they use it in a trade this offseason?
I am really still eyeing the number two pick. I still think it's in play, because when you look at the Spurs, they've been mentioned as one of the teams going after Giannis Antetokounmpo, right? So if the Pelicans, with those two Bucks picks, get into a three-way deal with the Spurs, I think there's a chance the Pelicans could claim that two pick this year as part of that trade, to give up one of those or both of those, depending on what the overall haul is, Bucks picks back to Milwaukee. Milwaukee really wants those picks in order to, if they're going to give up Giannis, because they don't have control of their picks for basically the next 5 years. So they need to get something back. So I think the two is still in play. And then, you know, as far as they fell, you have to remember, one, two, and three also fell as well. So what do the Hornets want to do at four? What do the Jazz want to do at five? And what do, you know, at six, the Wizards want to do? All of them may not be interested in drafting a 19-year-old this year, because they are already, you know, they've been tanking the last 2 years. They may want to change direction in that case. So I think that the Pelicans could move up a little bit, or they could move up a lot. And if the deal isn't there this year, you have a very talented, and I think the next year's draft class is more talented than this year's. If you can find a lottery pick next year and move back in this year's draft, I think there's still value to be had, and especially if you can secure a pick in next year's draft that's higher up. because I think next year's draft is an amazingly deep and talented draft.
David, two questions for you. One, what is the biggest need going into this offseason for the Pelicans, in your opinion? And secondly, it's not a question of if Giannis gets traded. It's just where he ends up at this stage. Could you see a possibility here that they can't do it with one team and it would be sort of a three-way deal involving Giannis? So I'll ask you first about biggest need for the Pelicans this offseason. And in a Giannis trade, is this going to be a one-on-one type deal with a team, or would they have to bring in a third party?
Yeah, you know, the Pelicans' biggest need is size and athleticism. They were destroyed on the boards last season, as bad a rebounding team as you're going to see. And then defensively, there was nothing as far as rim protection goes, and just the ability to stop teams from getting to the rim at will. So they have to get bigger and taller. There were times on the court where the Pelicans looked like a collegiate basketball team compared to some of the monsters that you see in the league. And as you look around right now in the playoffs, an Oklahoma City team with two giants up front, you know, a Nikola Jokic in the middle in Denver, Miles Turner doing a lot of damage in that Pacers series, and then the Pacers, the Cavs getting to where they are with that double big front court and Jared Allen and Mobley. It's just, it's a league that's getting taller and more athletic in the front court again. And so the Pelicans need to catch up there. As far as Giannis, as I said, they have to make a three-team deal if you're the Bucks, because they've got to get picks and they have to get cheaper. You know, they've got three players. If you're talking about Giannis, Kyle Kuzma, and Damian Lillard, and Damian Lillard won't even play for them next year due to his Achilles injury, the injury that he suffered in the playoffs. He's gone for the year. That's $130 million of the $164 million cap for those three players for the Bucks. So if they're going to trade Giannis, they need picks back in return. Only a third team can give them that, that are going to give them the kind of picks that they need. So I think that it's absolutely – this is why the Pelicans still have power. I think that what happened in the lottery was certainly a disappointment, but it's not a disaster when you look at the history of this franchise. And in particular, Troy Weaver and Joe Dumars, two guys who have been active in trading players within the draft over their careers. And then you have Bryson Graham, who's done a great job of identifying talent. I think the Pelicans will be a major player no matter what in any Giannis deal.
David, we talked about it was a disappointment. Ain't disappointment in San Antonio. Charlie and I were talking about this off the air. They got the 2nd and the 14th overall pick in this draft. You know, this team here, they got a little bit of the rabbit's foot sitting in the right pocket. You know, you didn't get the 1st overall pick, but you sort of sitting in the catbird seat at 2, and you also have 14. This could be a major, major offseason for the Spurs, and we know they got one piece set in place, and Wimby's going to be there a long, long time in San Antonio. This is a team to really keep a close eye on in the 2025 offseason.
And, of course, they're in the West.
You would figure.
Yeah, and they're in your division.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's the hardest thing for Pelicans fans to swallow, is that in your division now, you've got the Mavericks getting Cooper Flagg. You've got the Spurs with the flexibility. And has anybody been more, like you said, lucky than the Spurs? You go back to David Robinson in 87. You had to wait a year for him after, you know, finished his naval service. But you had David Robinson in 87. You get Tim Duncan in 97. You get Victor Wembanyama. And you have – they also have, let's not forget, this stockpile of young players like a Stephon Castle, who's – they've had back-to-back rookies of the year in Stephon Castle and Wembanyama. You still got Jeremy Sochan. You've got Keldon Johnson. So they have all these young players and two picks in this first round to make deals. So, yeah, this is a huge offseason for the Spurs. And then, of course, you've got the Rockets in the division as well, who just came off a 50-win season, and they have the flexibility to go out and make a major deal. Of course, they're talked about as one of the destinations possibilities for Kevin Durant, which would be a huge upgrade for them, or maybe a Devin Booker as well. So the division is not getting any easier, certainly for the Pelicans. And the Western Conference is just turning into a deeper and deeper gauntlet for anybody to try to come out of for the next 5 to 10 years.
David, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, always great insights. Love to have you on to talk NBA and also Pelicans. And, You just get a feeling when, you know, when you see that the Lakers sort of slip a little bit, the Clippers, who knows where they end up. Then what you got? The Rockets, you got Dallas, you got San Antonio. They all sort of piecing all this together. Man, you better step up your game and quickly if you're the Pelicans.
And let's not forget Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City, too.
Talented, right. And they've got plenty of number one picks over the next few years, too. Yeah. So it's not going to get any easier.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it, bud.
Thank you, guys.
All righty. David Grubb does a great job covering the NBA. When we come back, no buddy of mine, we did 9 years of television together. John Forcade, former Saints quarterback, will come on with us to talk about the Saints quarterback situation and how it is, man, when you get under center that rookie season and the people around you, what that means. We'll have John Forcade on with us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long while we're trying to get in touch with John Forcade. We talked about this yesterday, but the Saints announced some roster moves today, and they have signed Hunter Dekkers, the former Iowa State quarterback. We talked about this yesterday. Not a lot of quarterbacks coming out of Iowa. That's not the breeding ground, so to speak, for quarterbacks. And he was a starting quarterback at Iowa State. He got caught up in a situation with the gambling spot. It was sort of sketchy all the way around. Sat out the 2023 season, but last year he played for Iowa Wesleyan, and man, he lit it up there, and he's got a gun on him now. He really, really does, and he throws the football. It comes out a lot of different angles, but he's very, very accurate, really good overall athlete. Grew up on a farm, so he knows a lot about hard work, and to make room for Hunter Dekkers, they have waived linebacker Anthony Argie, and that was a guy that the Saints thought a lot of, had him in camp the last 2 years, and he was on the developmental squad on the active roster for a short time, special teams type individual, but again, they've added a quarterback now in Hunter Dekkers, and I'm going to tell you, he can sling it. Now, he's erratic. I saw that at Iowa State when he played there, but he really was impressive last year at Iowa Wesleyan. Again, the situation with the gambling spot came into play. Charlie, I think, you know, what we talked about with David certainly draws up the ire here that this offseason is going to be really, really interesting. And you could almost kind of like connect the dots here with Milwaukee. And who are they going to deal with? Is it San Antonio? Is it Houston? Is it Dallas? And somehow, some way, now, you know, you got a spot here where the Pelicans are involved. We got John. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Former Saints quarterback and a guy, I think for 9 years, him and I did television together, John Forcade. John, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, Mike, I apologize. Man, I left my phone in rehab, and I realized you were calling me. I had to turn around and go back and get it.
I got you. No problem.
Hey, when I say rehab, I mean physical health rehab, not the other alcoholic rehab or something like that, you know?
Hey, I'm fixing to hit that next week after some work done on the knee, so I know what you're talking about. John, I had an interview this afternoon with someone, and they were talking about, you know, kind of growing up and always had an interest, certainly in the sports world and everything else, but they were asking about some of the best players for me growing up in my teenage years and early on. First guy, I said, can't leave him off, John Forcade. Man, John, I said, he was a man like playing against boys back then. And what you did for Shaw High School just was unbelievable. And Bobby and I talk about that all the time about, you know, man, you know, if – we beat them once in that game, but if we play 10 times, most likely Shaw's going to win at least 8 of those 10 games. But the first name that popped in my head was you, and you had just a great high school career. Went on to Ole Miss, broke records there, and certainly played in the National Football League. So I wanted to tell you that. It was the first name that popped in my head.
Well, I appreciate it, Mike. You know, it's a long time ago, man. Like, that's a lot. I can't even count that far back now. You know, it's been years.
Sean, in watching what happened with Derek Carr, just your opinion on kind of the breakdown here. John, he is the most polarizing football player I've ever seen put on the black and gold. And, you know, a lot of that having to do with two things. I think, one, when you follow in the moccasins of the greatest player that's ever put on the black and gold in Drew Brees, a lot of expectations. Yeah, you were 14-13 as a starter, but was there any signature wins, that comeback victory and who you beat along the way, that all sort of mounted, and you knew it was going to be quick. One way or another, that was going to be a divorce here between the two parties.
Oh, there's no doubt. I think this was his last year here, and it's a shame how it ended. You know, we can't, and I say we, the people, everybody wants to point the finger at the quarterback and its car and its whatever. You know, and some stuff came upon him that it wasn't of his fault. Injuries happen to a lot of people in playing this sport. I just think that he's following Drew, and after Drew is what they had a couple of years of, they had nobody. I mean, Jameson and on and on and on. You go get other guys, but listen, the Carr gave everything he could have gave when he was here, giving it. And when you talk about this injury, and I want to say this about it. I know what the guy's going through. I'm telling you what it all came down to, Mike. The guy got hurt last year, and when he got hurt. And then he got to the Saints after that was said and done. And I guarantee this. They got with him and said, okay, we don't want to do the surgery. You don't want to do the surgery. We're going to rehab you. And then after the rehab, we'll let you go ahead and throw it. I think you'll be okay by that, give you 4 months off, 5 months, whatever it may be. The same thing happened to me. And what happens after 4 or 5 months? You kind of find out, man, I should have had the surgery because I am not ready to roll. It's worse than we thought. And that's exactly what I saw here in him, that he didn't have the surgery. He thought rehab was going to do it. He couldn't throw. It's too late now. Season begins in August. Here he is in May, and he's got no throwing ability right now. So that's a lack of communication. Maybe he just didn't want to have the surgery. Okay, maybe it's worse than what we think it is. And I had to go ahead and rotate a cuff and elbow tear surgery after I left the New Orleans Saints in a playoff game against the Chicago Bears. And they told me, oh, no, we're going to rehab you. Come training camp. I couldn't throw football. Couldn't find out. I ended up having two tears in my doggone arm, and I'm out done. I'm really pretty much done. So that's a bad situation for him. But listen, he gave everything he could possibly give. He didn't have the greatest team around him, Mike. You know that as well as I do. This was an average football club with the best player on the team was a quarterback, but he had an average football team, and he had bad coaching. It was just a bad situation, and I feel bad about the guy. You put him on a team that's probably a playoff-bound team, and maybe he just manages a team to get him to what they need to go through, win a playoff game and see what happens. It didn't work out for him. I don't know what more we can say about it.
John, been put in this spot as a rookie quarterback, and it's tough even on the veterans. But for the average fan, they saw what C.J. Stroud did 2 years ago. They saw what Jaden Daniels did a year ago. Well, anybody can do it. So Tyler Shuck now, he doesn't even have the door a little open. Man, he's got it wide open. It's his job to lose at this stage. What you mentally have to go through as a rookie quarterback and the people around you and how they help you. So I'm going to get your thoughts on being in that situation yourself as a rookie quarterback and what you have to go through and how important it is maybe to have yourself someone on the roster who has been a veteran. And I'm not talking about no Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins, but who has been there, done that, that could help you get through some of the tough spots.
Well, Mike, I don't think they're going to go to camp with three quarterbacks. I think they're going to get a veteran. They're going to bring a veteran here. I don't know who it may be, but that does help out. Yeah, you can't sit there and go to camp saying, oh, I'm going to camp with Hayner and I'm going to camp with Spencer Rowe. Those aren't veteran guys that you can, confide in and get some work in and look at things. Those guys are sort of like you. I mean, look, he's going to camp. I believe he's older than these two cats, and he just got out of college. So that part's going to help with the fact that he's an older guy. He's been, probably 3 years he should have been out of college, and he wasn't. It's not his fault. It happens, injuries. But he's going in as a rookie knowing that, hey, I'm a little bit older. I've played a lot of football in my time. And he's got to go in and realize, man, it is my opportunity to be the starter from day one going forward. Whereas if you're coming in as a rookie and you got two or three guys ahead of you and then you got a veteran guy that you might sit around, this, that, and let's just take Dart, for example. Dart, if they don't have to rush Dart, I mean, they'd be fools to do it. The guy's got some quarterbacks ahead of him. They're going to be okay. If Dart's fine with New York, that's great. But now you got the Saints. They have no other opportunity. Here's the opportunity to say, wait a minute. We got three quarterbacks there all a year apart from each other coming out of college. One was here 3 years. One year is going to be a second year. And now we've got a rookie who's really older than the two rookies to the two other guys. So all this young man has to do is don't just go in there and play. They know what they have here. They notice it. They're not expecting him to go in there and win the Super Bowl. They're not expecting him to take this team to glory. If it happens, Mike, that's a lanyard. You know what lanyard means. If it happens for him, then it means great things. But I don't think they're going to put a lot of pressure on the guy, and they shouldn't. Because if it ain't him, it's Spencer. If it ain't Spencer, it's Hannah. So where you looking at these guys with all the experience? They don't have any. So this kid's going to come in here and get as much reps. I think he's got a good quarterback coach, offense coordinator, and maybe the head coach more can get in his ear. But I like what they got going in here. I just think, you know, if you're going to go with the kid, you got to stick with the kid.
John, I agree with you 2,000% on that. John, thanks so much for joining us. Hey, we'll get you back on real soon to talk a little bit more about the Saints roster. And there's some holes to fill here. It's just not one spot here. And, man, what a gold mine Tampa Bay did getting Baker Mayfield, huh? None of us thought Baker would turn out to be what he's turned out to be. And it has been the real steal in the NFC South to get a guy like Baker Mayfield right after they had Tom Brady.
Look, before you get up there, I'm going to say this to you. When I was doing the show with Gus and a few other guys 2 years ago, I said, man, go get Baker, get Baker, get Baker. They ended up getting Carr. Nothing against Carr, but I really thought Baker was a little bit better situated for this football club. But look, you don't know what would have happened. You get Baker here with T.A. as a coach and the screw-ups they had here, and, you know, it didn't work out, but it's water under the bridge now.
Yep, you got to move on with it. Thank you, John. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right, bud. Okay, Mike. Take care.
All righty. John Forcade, former Saints quarterback here on the roster, and man, a great football player at Shaw and certainly at Ole Miss. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number one of sports talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in our number one of sports talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Man, I got a lot of sports talking about today. Some of those days, man, everything sort of blows up, and today's one of those type days. We'll be back with more sports talk, but we want to tell everybody at 6:20 tonight, we'll be joined here on the Big 870 WWL by Drew Brees. We'll be back with more sports talk right after this news break.